The following podcast is a live recording of a radio show first broadcast by Fresh FM with assistance from New Zealand On Air.
Good morning, and you're on the Deadline Report with Ben Vigin Investigates, care of the Deadline Report. And I took you up last week from the sort of Ukraine war uncensored, taking you from the agreements that were made during the SALTS talks and what became known as Glasnost and Perestroika between Ronald Reagan and then George Bush and the Soviet Russian Empire. And today we're going to take you from basically 2010-ish thereabouts. And just to basically recap, though, how we've got SALT talks, Perestroika, basically promising the Russians that if you drop all your nuclear weapons, we'll do the same. You stay on your side of the field, we'll stay on our side of the field. That was the very, very core of the end of the Cold War. That's why the Cold War ended. That was the deal that was offered, and that was put on offer. 93, Russia has a problem. They have a coup d'etat. There's a lot of background history behind that coup, too. It's all worth now, in hindsight, worth going back and looking at. But the basic outcome is that Gorbachev is put under house arrest, has managed to make a contact between the Russians and the West via, of all things, sat phone owned by Paul Tatchlam, who was an American entrepreneur from Oklahoma who would later get, you know, splattered against the wall in the stairwell of his hotel. But that's another story. But he passed his cell phone to Yeltsin. And basically, the gist of it, the basics of it, is that the West is saying, well, actually, you know, we'll only come and help you guys if you agree to our loans on the terms that we want, which means open your market completely and letting us buy whatever we want. There is no going to be going sort of half like Denmark or Finland, I mean, a semi-socialist nation. You've got to join the whole free market, or else it's back to you being ruled by the KGB. Like, you know, you don't really have much of an offer. They accept. Yeltsin steps up. Yeltsin falls over. Putin steps into the place. Putin sort of pops out of nowhere. And, you know, there's two versions of one. One was that he's picked by the West and he was the greediest opportunist to go for it. The other one is that the Russians had a plan B and Gorbachev already had his person selected. And you got to kind of, Translating History is a very good book if you want to kind of go into the ins and outs of the successionist of the Russian Politburo. So if you really want to know that backstory, that's going to read that book. But Putin turns up and he's sort of going, to all these oligarchs then and buy whatever they want, including Stephen Jennings, the guy that created the blueprint for Rogenomics in New Zealand and the sell-off of public assets in New Zealand, which is pretty much all the same model which they've taken to Russia, which is therefore not surprising that we've got a Kiwi leading that particular point. And he goes on to be a very big deal, and he's currently doing the same thing he's did in Russia now in Africa, but for the Chinese. And that's again when we find a lot of, when you look at, like, you know, the outcome of all these public assets is that, you know, today 79% of the Ukraine is actually owned, arable land is owned by offshore conglomerates, and the largest shareholder of that is actually state-owned Chinese companies. This has actually always been, when I look at all this money laundering and organization stuff, you know, it's like, yeah, there's the mafia and there's all these other exotic types. But when you really pull down the pie, like, they only make up about 15% of the pie. And what I'm increasingly seeing is that, you know, when you look at that dirty money trail, I'd say about 75 to 85% of that pie is going into New York banks and going from New York banks to Hong Kong banks, and from Hong Kong banks is going into China. And that pretty much will, if you just want to take it from the money trail, is telling you everything you need to know. But that's another story, and let's stick with Ukraine. Okay, so we have gone for the whole situation that Gorbachev has also done a very good job while he's been going kiss-kiss with all these oligarchs. He's been going around and basically kind of putting himself in position to kind of take over these banks that are controlling this illicit flow of cash, which I call the Ozark. And this is basically the battle for the Ozark Wars, which are, you know, these are taking place between 2000s after Putin has basically, the West has said, well, you turn a blind eye to our illegal invasion of Iraq and we won't worry about what you're up to in Georgia and Chechnya. So, you know, Putin's doing the same thing. China's doing the same situation to the Uruguay population over there, because this whole ideal is, it's like, you know, it's not that they're cracking down on Muslims. What they're doing is they're cracking down on people that are potential separatists, ethnic separatist problems in areas that they've taken over and want to basically colonize for their resources. And all parties, China, America, United States of America, which includes the Five Eyes, we are all guilty as sin. So this whole idea that somehow the Russians are the bad guys and we're the lovely saints, well, that's a load of rubbish to begin with. And probably, if you really want to know the truth, then you should be looking at what all the nasty things that the Russians are doing, accepting that that's what they're going on, but then turn around and actually looking at what your own governments are doing, because, you know, our government, New Zealand specifically, is balls deep in carnage. Team Emirates, have you ever looked at what Emirates wars that they're funding? You know, that's genocide. We don't talk about that. Full page articles in the New Zealand Herald. Yay, Team Emirates, let's take blood money. So it's kind of highly hypocritical. And of course, during the 2017 period, which is after 2013-14, which we'll kind of go back to, but that's when we see Mikhail Kimmich kind of popping up and New Zealand wanting to offer him to buy the America's Cup, and we've got Roman Abramovich running around buying luxury resorts, and we've got Mike Moore, former Prime Minister, Chairman of the World Trade Organization, the man that came up with the Global Migration Pact that was initially rejected by progressive liberals because they saw it for what it was free trade, outright neoliberalism, but they've repackaged it and made it like about diversity and all these other buzzwords, when really it's just basically a license to do whatever you actually want. Again, don't believe me, go and look up the movie Battle for Seattle, which shows you what Mike Moore's initial global migration, you know, vision was. And then you can then look at, you know, the global migration and go, oh, they're the same thing. But in 2008, he was also being made the chairman of the Altamoa Foundation, which was a highly, highly dodgy slush fund in the Paradise Papers. You go up again, not one single mention. You know, we talk about, oh, put it in his ugly eyes in the Paradise Papers. A, there is never a direct line to put in. If you were going to look at it, you'd look at the Food for Oil program where the West tried to bribe Russia, and that again involved New Zealand companies and people like Oscar Wilde and people like Margaret Thatcher, who was basically working with Mark Rich in Switzerland, where, you know, pretty much where the whole Weinbox guys had disappeared off to after the mid-90s, after they were caught doing pretty much everything we're talking about in the Paradise Papers and the Panama Papers 10 years before. And again, when you look at my take on the Ozark War, it carries about 20 to 30 years of coverage that gives, you know, context and macro scope explanation to the Paradise and Panama Papers, which they concentrate on the 90s, and they try to kind of get it to fit this Western model. I'm saying, well, no, your moral falls down because the money trail isn't going to Moscow. The dodgy money trail is going to those New York banks, and then it's going to China. So that's where they kind of, everybody is getting it wrong, because they are trying to make its round circles fit into square triangles. But let's take a little bit of a break, and we will come back the next time to explain more of this from the 2013 to 2014 period. And in the meantime, we're going to play money, because this is what it's all about. It's all about oil and minerals and resources. There is no nobility behind this.
Get back. That's my part. Money, so they say, is the root of all evil today. But if you ask for a rise, it's no surprise that they're giving none away. Away, 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 away.
I was in the right.
Yes, absolutely in the right.
I certainly was in the right.
The Deadline Report, and we have been kind of getting into the second part of the show. What I'm trying to do is, you can look at a war and say,
those guys, they're all responsible. Oh, they're evil, evil, look what they're doing, look what they're doing.
And that'll give you the results that you want, because you're only looking at it from one particular perspective. Or you can look at a war realistically, and you can go, yes, they are doing all those terrible things. What are you guys doing? Oh, now that I understand both of your good bits and your bad bits, I actually understand this conflict, and I'm not trying to make it a movie. I'm actually trying to study it as opposed to come up with a conclusion or, you know, make it fit my moral standards. Reality is, Russia's got a really good history that actually when you go to war with them, they're really vicious, and it's part of their defense pact, their notification. Like, don't come and start shit with us, because if you do, we'll finish it. And so, you know, as Adolf Hitler and Napoleon ethically show, that when you start shit with the Russians, they tend to finish it. And that's pretty much all the things, the Chechnya, Bosnia, which are, these are things which I was writing about in the 90s, when our beloved media that now hates Russia, and right now was really kind of being very quite tokenistic about it, while they were quite happy to let all these billionaires come into New Zealand, get involved in America's Cup. Then you got the great things I really like, which I think are actually quite significant from the 90s to the now. This is a period I've been writing about. I've been writing about Balkans and superpower growing of a new Cold War. That's been my warning when we're saying with the Russians, when Obama was laughing at the idea that we should be fighting the Russians. I was saying, well, no, actually, look what they're up to in Chechnya, look what they're up to in Georgia. But because we had let them do, we'd done the same thing in Iraq and Afghanistan, we didn't poke the finger at them, because that was the deal. They turned a blind eye and we turned a blind eye. And now we've suddenly gone a moral conscience, while we're also ignoring all the things that we're doing up to in Africa. We're ignoring the support of massive genocide in Israel. Or more importantly, we've got people saying we support the war in Ukraine while we oppose Israel. Well, I'm going, you can't. They're the same people. They're literally the same people. The same weapons, the same training, the same monetary line. Again, New Zealand, Paradise Papers. New Zealand drones going to Azerbaijan to be sold to Azerbaijani oil dictators, because that's really fits in line with our climate change policy, isn't it? And those guys are actually supplying Russian gas to Israeli guys, and in return those drones are ending up in the hands of terrorism. How in any sense is that not hypocritical? But the whole thing is, you know, a bunch of lies and nonsense. And if people just sit back and actually follow this conflict from the neoconservatives that engineered it when they started moving their assets into Eastern Europe, and including this idea that they had to reserve first strike, and including this idea that there's nuclear proliferation, when the intelligence was quite clear that we, the Western companies, were engineering this, because there's a lot of money to be made on nuclear weapons. 99% of all arms profits come from nuclear weapons. The nuclear weapon babies don't want to stop the nuclear weapons being made. But, you know, they need this. It's their bread and butter. So 2013, Russia offered, and this was going on, and the Russians turned around and they offered the Ukrainian government a very cheap loan. They'd had elections, the support of East Europe Ukrainians, who are many of them Russian ethnic descent. They'd got a government elected that was, you know, basically pro-Russian elected. These were international observers who come and said this was a fair and acceptable election, nothing dodgy. And they're offering this cheap loan, cheap gas. And instead, they then had this sort of protest in Maiden. Basically, it turns out that, in actual fact, the people that opened fire were not the police, which is, you know, largely what the Western media told, until eventually that story got proven to be disregarded by ballistics and multiple reports to be disregarded. But we don't talk about that anymore. It came from far-right activists. And we've got the US Embassy admitting that, yes, they were behind coup d'etat and screwed Russia's guy, because their guy was now in place. And of course, again, the Paradise Papers does connect directly to Zelensky, doesn't connect directly to Putin. But again, we don't turn much volume up on that particular story, because the name of propaganda is to only point out the bad guy's faults and not mention your own faults as well, which we've got blood and brains and stuff splat all over us. I love this woman the other day saying, "But the Russians are killing journalists." You don't think they haven't killed Western journalists? They haven't tortured anyone? Heard of a little one called Julian Assange? You know, I think 12 years they tortured him. Where was our wonderful neoliberal governments standing up for Julian back then? What happened to Edward Snowden? So let's cut the horse pucky and own the fact that both sides are looking pretty bad, and let's start talking honestly about what's going on and what we can do to stop it. Because the end result of this is boom, boom, and nobody wins.
2014, they had the coup. And we also turn around and see it was about 2015. And then there was the Eastern European. You've got the neo-Nazis from Australia, people like Nathan Lane's former soldier, turning up in the Ukraine. In fact, 2015, about the same time Australians are turning up in Ukraine, New Zealand's getting death threats at the University of Otago, and they're shutting it down. That's on the front page of the newspaper stories on 4chan and 8chan, which in 2019, it's the same channels that Brenton Tarrant used, and he made the same typos as the typos on the 2015 social media threats that shut down Otago University front page of the newspaper. And pretty much looks like they were the two same people in question. But it also, either regardless if it's not, it puts a lie. The 2015 incident totally shows that the police's claim that they weren't monitoring, or the security forces weren't monitoring those channels, is absolutely a lie. Another lie of many, many, many lies that we're being told. And of course, 2017, there were also mass weapons stolen and guns, tens of thousands, 25, 26,000 rounds stolen from Pistol Club in Dunedin, which is the ones that vetted for Brenton Tarrant, which I have written about all the way back in 2010 about its connections to the intelligence security industry, very, very racist mercenary organisations, and some very famous fight clubs in Dunedin, which everybody who's from Dunedin will know the first name of that person who ran those fight clubs, and they'll know the last name. And you can find his office not that far away from the ODT, and you'll see funny little mercenary guys with short haircuts wandering in and out of there all the time. But yeah, that big burglary happened. You know, again, nobody's saying, well, maybe we need to keep a closer eye on Dunedin. People are making complaints about Brenton Tarrant. And meanwhile, neo-Nazis coming from Australia that are actually being recruited from New Zealand are also turning up in the Ukraine. And at the same time, we've still got Russians trying to buy up our water in New Zealand, like the Chinese are trying to buy up the water in Christchurch. Funny how the money always comes back to China. There is not even about more than my choice opinion. It's just every time when we look at what's going on, ultimately, who is the money winner? It's the CCP. So pretty much that event takes place, and we get another round of more security, more censorship, and they're all being funded by places like the United Arab Emirates and Saudi Arabia that have got really poor human rights records. Because again, part of the way to fight a war, you need to be able to control the voice, the people, you know, you've got to have censorship. So this is a really, really important part of killing your life. So you don't want them turning around and going, wait a minute, you've got as much blood and guts on your face as well, which is exactly what the case is. Again, it's kind of a little annoying for anybody over 40 to have to slap them around the edge and go, look, we went through this whole 50s, 60s, coming us out of the evil, evil. And then we woke up one day when no one could win this war, and we went 70s and 80s, all activists turned around and said, you know what, you both need your heads knocked together. Don't care who started it, must come to an end. And that's what we've got to fast forward, because otherwise we've just been sucked right back into the same lie that we've already fought. And it'd be really quite annoying to have to fight this war again and remind people about the Rainbow Warrior, and that it was actually our allies that blew up the Rainbow Warrior, not the Russians. And the 42 wars that have taken place since the end of World War II, largely the Russians again, not other ones involved, or telling the lies as they were in Vietnam, as they were in Iraq. We will take another little break, and I'm actually going to go with Paperman, a paperback writer from the Beatles, because I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the journalists who actually have been telling the opposite version of the story, and we'll take it from there. This has been Virgin on the Ukraine War Uncensored.
Right.
Vigin on the Deadline Report, the Ukraine War Uncensored, Kira Fresh FM, the greatest radio station in the whole South Island. So I'm doing a narrative today about kind of saying, hey, it's not a question of excusing the Russians, saying that they're not doing terrible things in warfield and people being shot and people being tortured. But I'm also pointing out that actual fact, number one, that guess what? We're doing exactly the same thing. And we need to focus on that, because what we're doing, as long as this war carries on, it's just going to get nastier and nastier. And we've already been through this whole Cold War stuff. So let's cut to the chase and get back to the, you stay on your side of the field, I stay on our side of the field, and we both get rid of our weapons, which seemed to be working until we broke the deal. And then the Russians said, what you normally do when you start shit with them, they started pushing back, and they're really good at pushing back. Napoleon and Hitler will tell you that. And I talked about basically the Christchurch shooting relationship that was used as the crisis, however it came to be. The crisis has been used as an opportunity to introduce censorship, largely by people that are actually very much guilty of, for example, Saudi Arabia sponsors the Christchurch shooting, and yet they chopped up Jamal Khashoggi because he showed that the UN Vision 2030, which was largely pushed through and Helen Clark's baby, the ambassador for Team Emirates, you know, the country that is killing and murdering people and with wars and genocide, that we're okay with. And like, we seem to be okay with also the murder in Israel, or more importantly, we're not connecting that the people that are trying to say no, we can't have peace in the Ukraine are the same people that want war in Israel. Funny that. Same people don't want peace. Funny that. Gee, I wonder what their monetary motives could possibly be. 85,000 people waiting to get surgery, but we want to go and have, when New Zealand's now going to have its own space force and buy some helicopters that would get shot down in 30 seconds in a real war. So kind of really stupid tactics anyway, and a waste of money. It's almost like some of our ministers have got interests in Chinese companies overseas. Gee, have you went ahead and looked up maybe the top cabinet members of the National Party and ACT? I wonder how many people we would find have friends that are working. Actually, I seem to remember Stephen Jennings, who did the autobiography on David Seymour's book. Stephen Jennings is a member of the New Zealand Initiative, which is part of the New Zealand Atlas Network, which is really into mining. But more importantly, he's a big entrepreneur involved in basically development, investment developments for Chinese investors in Africa. That's one example. Then, of course, we've got Mainzeal. It could go on and on. But the point is, our strategies we're currently involving are really dumb. And this is not old school. If you believe that guns win wars now, you are really like a dinosaur. Accountants win wars now, and tactical nuclear weapons, which you don't want too close to your country. So when another rival, Sunny, starts putting tactical nuclear weapons right next to you when he said he wouldn't, and that's why he stopped having big missiles beforehand, it's kind of like, you know, what do you expect them going to do and how to do? Again, a lot of those guys that were involved, the other thing that's very interesting to point out is a lot of the guys that were involved in Mikhail Kimmich when he was set up in New Zealand, and same with the guys at the Altamo Foundation that was putting money in Mike Moore's back pocket. Literally, go and have a look it up. Also, while you have a look at it, go and look at Alan Hubbard. Have a look at his Paradise Connections, because he founded the South Canterbury Finance, which he also financed with Humphrey Wallison from Christchurch, former guy that deeply involved in the Christchurch Press. And Alan Hubbard was involved in Paradise Companies that, when you look at the list of shareholders, are members of the extreme far-right Tory government in the UK. Also heavily involved in companies that have, like Zato, for example, that they were not their company, but were in their Scales trading, but Scales was involved in importing Israeli weapons, and so was Zato, so was Helicopter New Zealand. Lots of Israeli Western Arms connections. And South Canterbury Finance, Humphrey Rollison, he would then basically found the Christchurch Foundation, which never made a single dock and chip. Like, you didn't know how much you donated to it. It was always exactly what their costs occurred for 2 years in a row. Then Christchurch shooting came along and they made $11 million 2 years after it was opened up, donated. But now nobody knows where that money's gone. And Deloitte's is saying, well, actually, they're not being very transparent and they won't hand over documents. And Christchurch Council's backing off the Christchurch Foundation. That's, you can read newspaper articles online that are saying that. I'm just repeating what I'm reading in the mainstream media. But the point is, the Christchurch Foundation, which first set up, was also linked to the Tel Aviv Foundation, which has, again, through Nathan Jacobson, the chairman for one point, some very interesting far-right connections. It's got connections to people like Eric Prince, for example. But in saying that, like, you know, do you have a gang like Cole Chapman started the right-wing resistance, which for 14, 15 years got paid by the New Zealand police and the Prime Minister's office from 1993 to 2014. And then there were questions asked about accounting, and then basically Cole Chapman got kicked out of it. He went off and founded the right-wing resistance, which is the same group that hired people like Nathan Telling to go and fight in the war in the Ukraine. And I'm saying to you, from my books in Christchurch, we've got this whole backdrop story in Christchurch and Otago, these neo-Nazi connected right-wing mercenary organisations that have a very interesting monetary trail. And I said, we see, you know, Nathan Jacobson is a good example of such of these connections. And it's very strange that of all the charities donating to an Islamic organisation, that it doesn't look very good, does it? And probably I would say, as an opinion, I don't say this Christchurch Foundation's done anything wrong, but people already are asking asking questions. And I think they need, it's quite legitimate because of the public concern that $11 million is a serious amount of money. We should have a proper look. But, you know, this is all before the invasion and the war in Russia, which happened in 2023. And now everybody's suddenly turning around and going, Russia's evil, Russia's bad. No, we won't talk about those guys like the Mikimich, even though the people that actually were the top bosses weren't actually in Moscow. They were actually in Las Vegas. So the problem is the money trail that everyone tries to keep putting on the Russians doesn't go that way. That's fact. I mean, you can't lie. That doesn't, it's not open to subjective. You just simply look. There is a direct line to Zelensky. There is a direct link to Putin. There is a direct line to Alan Hubbard. There isn't a direct line to, you know, what I'm saying, the money followed to its conclusion that ultimately ends up in these big, big multinational groups. The interesting guys in these syndicates tend to be 15% the Faye Rich Whites and Proc Banks and the Zato. And then the other 5% of these big multinational Chinese state companies. And I think that's really the real issue. And I think those guys are smart enough. If I was a Chinese, I wouldn't spend all my money invading the left wing. I wouldn't spend all my money invading the right wing. I think I basically put my money both ways. And I think one of the things that we really need to learn in this particular day and age is the term counterintelligence, the art of spy hunting. And probably the best thing that we can do in this wonderful world of who's your friend and who's your enemy is stay out of other people's wars and champion peace, because that's the only way that we're going to get out of this. This is Ben Vigen on the Deadline Report.
The podcast you just listened to was a live recording of a radio show, first broadcast on Fresh FM with support from New Zealand On Air. Fresh FM is a community access media station based in Te Tauihu, the top of the South Island, New Zealand. The funding of Access Media makes these podcasts possible. To find similar programs by other community access media stations, go online to accessmedia.nz. If you or your group would like to know more about how you can have a program on our station, please contact us. Visit our website, freshfm.net, for our contact details.